Good morning. As most of you know, I have a little side business. I sell safes. Initially, when I started when I bought the business, I was not sure how it was going to go trying to sell someone a several thousand dollar steel box. But it's been really interesting talking to people, watching them kind of work through their decision. And I've noticed some things about how you sell to people and how you persuade them to make a choice that I thought was applicable to witnessing. So that's what I'm going to talk about this morning, because we're told that Jesus told his apostles, "I will make you fishers of men." And that's what we are. Well, if you're a fisher of men, then you have to know how to bait your hook and how to get the fish interested and finally to hook the fish. So this morning we're going to talk a little bit about how to get people's attention. We'll spend most of our time on what you do when you have actually found someone who's really interested. And then we'll discuss how people are not logical. They really aren't. The role of listening versus speaking. And then briefly closing the sale. Okay, so we're going to start in 1 Corinthians 3, verses 5 through 9. It says, this is Paul speaking, and he's just gotten done talking about how they quarrel among themselves, so-and-so baptized me, so-and-so baptized me. And he says, "What after all is Apollos, and what is Paul? Only servants, through whom you came to believe, as the Lord has assigned to each his task. I planted the seed, Apollos watered it, but God made it grow. So neither he who plants nor he who waters is anything, but only God who makes things grow. The man who plants and the man who waters have one purpose, and each will be rewarded according to his own labor. For we are God's fellow workers, you are God's field, God's building." So, the first step is getting people's attention. Okay, you're not always harvesting. Sometimes you're just planting seed or watering. And we should plant seed wherever we can and be patient, because you never know what will come of that. When I first bought the business, Winston's the guy that I bought the business from. He told me that he often saw people show after show for 2 or 3 years, and then they'd buy one. And that's been my experience too. But the more you sow, the better you do. A man reaps what he sows. Sow sparingly, reap sparingly, right? So how do we sow? We sow in what we say. We sow in the manner people see us use, our character. And then just the priority that we give church things. If I say, no, I can't do that thing Wednesday night because I've got church, or no, I can't do that thing Sunday because I have church, people remember that. People remember whether or not you use profanity. That's actually something that people pick up on very quickly without you having to say anything. So the first thing is get people's attention. And then second is spend most of your time with serious customers. I'm going to go to Matthew 13. I'm going to touch on the parable of the sower here, verses 3 through 8. It says, "Then he told them many things in parables, saying, A farmer went out to sow his seed. As he was scattering the seed, some fell along the path, and birds came and ate it up. Some fell on rocky places where it did not have much soil. It sprang up quickly because the soil was shallow. But when the sun came up, the plants were scorched, and they withered because they had no root. Other seed fell among thorns, which grew up and choked the plants. Still other seed fell on good soil, where it produced a crop, 160 or 30 times what was sown. He who has ears to hear, let him hear." So, what are we looking for? We don't want thorny ground. We don't want stony ground. We want good ground. But you can't tell when you're sowing the seed, so you sow the seed everywhere. But good ground makes itself known. If I'm the farmer and I'm sowing seed, and I come back and look at it a week or two later, I'll see sprouts. Now, some of those sprouts won't commend anything, because some of this ground produces sprouts that they spring up quickly and then they get scorched. But after 3 or 4 weeks, I'm going to know what the good ground is, right? Because those plants survived. So that's where I'm going to spend most of my time if I'm the farmer. So spend most of your time with serious customers. People who are serious customers are those who are actively looking. So a serious customer, in my case, has recognized that he has something of value that's worth protecting, right? It's not normally a safety thing with my vaults, because you can achieve locking your stuff up and keeping your kids away from it a lot cheaper than what I'm offering. So normally they have valuables. And the other thing a serious customer has recognized is that those valuables are vulnerable. There is a possibility of loss. And we're hoping for the same thing in a person we're witnessing to. We want them to know that they have a soul and that it's valuable, and they need to have recognized that it's possible to lose that. In some ways, this is self-regulating in practice, because someone who isn't what I consider a serious customer is not going to spend that much time with you. So you don't have to worry about spending that much of your time with them. But it is important to recognize where people are at. 1 Corinthians 9. We'll be starting in verse 19. This is Paul talking, and he's talking specifically about trying to witness to people. And he says, "Though I am free and belong to no man, I make myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible. To the Jews I became like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law I became like one under the law, though I myself am not under the law, so as to win those under the law. To those not having the law I became like one not having the law, though I am not free from God's law but am under Christ's law, so as to win those not having the law. To the weak I became weak to win the weak. I have become all things to all men so that by all possible means I might save some. I do all this for the sake of the gospel, that I may share in its blessings." So the next thing we need to remember is we have to relate to people. When I read this, the first thing that pops in your head is you think, wow, Paul's really kind of a chameleon. He'll say whatever people want to hear. That's not what he's saying. What are we doing with all this time we're spending with people? Some of the time we're answering questions. Most of the time we should be asking them and listening. We ask questions and listen. I think it's funny, we always worry about, what am I going to say if somebody asks me? Well, you need to have an answer if people ask you for the reason of your hope. But most of the time you should be listening, not talking. Ask questions and listen. We have this tendency, we think to ourselves, well, I know all these things that this person doesn't know that they need to hear. I know about Christ's salvation. Maybe they think they're not good enough. I know they are good enough, because it's not a matter of good enough. I'm not good enough either. I know that. I know all these things about God that they need. I need to tell them. And that's logical, but it's not very effective in practice. When we act like that, hopefully they can tell it's in love. That does make a huge difference. But if we act like that and we just pour information on them, it reflects a belief that what I have to say is more important than what they have to say. And that's not the attitude we want to convey to them. It doesn't express interest in them. If it's heartfelt and loving, it may express care, but generally otherwise it won't. And it's starting with no information on your part. You are starting from a position of ignorance trying to preach to someone because you don't know where they're at. So we absolutely have to relate to them first. If they have questions, we'll answer those the best they can, but we don't do what we call throwing up on them. We don't throw up information on them. Even if it's exactly what they need, it'll be too much and too forceful. So what am I asking? I'm asking questions. What am I asking? Why? I'm trying to find some common ground. Paul said that he became like a Jew to win the Jews, became like one under the law to win those under the law. Well, in Paul's situation, he kind of had a pretty good idea what it meant to be a Jew, what it meant to be under the law, and things like that. But what we're looking for is some common ground. And we don't necessarily have something that's that obvious. So it's fairly likely that we're more alike than we are different with people. Most people are good folks, even outside of the church. They're good folks by our definition, not God's. So a lot of times we're going to have more in common with them than we are differing. And if we're genuinely interested and we ask questions, you will find something you have in common. People like to interact with people that they see as like them. Another reason I ask questions is I want to find things that I like about them. And that helps me to care about them. If I'm genuinely interested and I genuinely care about the other person, that helps me come across better. They'll see that. And then another reason we ask questions is we need to find out what they're after. Proverbs 18:13 says, "He that answereth a matter before he heareth it, it is folly and shame unto him." So if I'm selling a safe, my safes, I happen to pick about the top of the line there is. I don't know of anything better than what I sell. And one of the things we're really proud of is our fire protection. Well, if I just talk to this guy for 20 or 30 minutes about our fire protection, and I find out he lives in one of the big houses in West Des Moines that has sprinklers, he doesn't care about fire protection. He's interested in security, or he wants it to look nice, or something else. So if I don't ask questions and find out what he's after, then all I'm doing is irritating him and driving him away. So the next point is people are not logical, including us, and don't pretend that they are. We ask questions to see what the customer wants, and then we see how many of his wants we can fill. So I sell safes. I sell safes that are pretty similar all the time. I don't always sell them in the same way. Okay? Like I said, we have a phenomenal fire rating. That doesn't always matter. They're very tough to break into. That is not always the most important thing. It's funny because sometimes I sell a Fort Knox safe because they love the beautiful finish. They're putting it somewhere in their house that it's going to be prominent. They want it to look nice. It's customizable. Sometimes it's just the lighting. You open the door and the lights are really nice. You can see all the way to back. So they're going to buy a $4,000 safe because of the lighting that they could buy from me separately. But they buy the safe. Fire protection, service and warranty delivery. Some of them, they've looked at three other safes that they like better than mine because they're less expensive or whatever reason. But the other people don't offer any way to get it in the house. So that just because we'll put it in the house, that gives us a sort of our in with them. And this is part of taking people where they are. If I sell someone a safe because they like the beautiful finish, they still get the security, they still get the fire protection, they still get the warranty and everything else. So I need to not worry so much about what they should be after and worry about what they are after. Focus on what they know they want now, because otherwise I won't get a chance to educate them on everything else. And so what we find is we have people looking for a faith or a church or a congregation in the same way. They're not logical. They like to think they're logical, but they're not. So it'll be something like, do I like the people there? Is it close to home? How's the singing? Do they pester me for money? These are the things that will bring them to you initially. Is that what they should be worried about? No. But that's what they are worried about. And we have to take them where they are. They'll ask, are there kids for their children to play with? Are the seats comfy? You know, things like that. So how do I know what they're after? I ask them, why are you looking? Did you move? Are you unsatisfied with where you were at? Have you never gone to church and you're just trying it out? You know, where are you at? What have you liked or not liked about churches you've been to before? I've had several coworkers. I get lots of church conversations with coworkers, and almost the first thing out of their mouth is, I'm so sick of them pestering me for money. I've been there for a week, and they're trying to get me to sign a pledge form or something. And I said, well, you know, that's not really scriptural. I said, the way it's supposed to be is you give a portion of your income as you've been prospered, and you decide how much that is. I said, you know, in our congregation, nobody knows what you give except the people that count the money, and they try not to. So just you're not going to know what they're after until you talk to them. But as soon as you get them talking about that sort of thing, what they like and don't like, you can start to, that gives you your opportunity to move into the stuff that they should be wanting. So the next step is to educate. So now it's time for us to talk a little more, although it should always be a discussion. One thing that is mentioned in Dale Carnegie's book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, is that once you've really listened to somebody and given them their chance to fully explain themselves, they feel a kind of obligation to let you do the same when it's your turn to talk. So that's another good reason that you should ask questions and listen, because they'll give you their attention when it's your turn. So when it's time to start kind of educating them again, I might touch on some things they liked and maybe expand on those. If somebody likes the lighting system in our safe, so I'll tell them, well, you know that Fort Knox's warranty extends the light system too. If your bulb burns out, they'll send you a new one. Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, that's nice. And then I can move on to things that they should like and benefits they haven't thought of, and asking questions along the way to see what they think. Okay. So, for example, go back to the money thing. If they've been put off with other groups, I'll explain to them how it's supposed to work. And I try and resist the temptation to badmouth other groups, because it is rarely productive. When I'm selling a safe, some of these other companies put out total junk. I know I won't say that. And if they ask specifically, I'll give them my opinion about them. But no, we're talking about what truth is. We're not talking about what lies are. But I have an opportunity to move toward talking about salvation, forgiveness, and personal growth, the benefits of having a church body, the family atmosphere, all the other wonderful benefits that God's given us. The next thing is really well illustrated in Luke 14 by Jesus. This scripture puzzled me for a long time. I'm like, why in the world did he bring that up? But he did. It's Luke 14, starting in verse 25. It says, large crowds were traveling with Jesus, and turning to them, he said, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother, his wife and children, his brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. And anyone who does not carry his cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. Suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Will he not first sit down and estimate the cost to see if he has enough money to complete it? For if he lays the foundation and is not able to finish it, everyone who sees it will ridicule him, saying, this fellow began to build and was not able to finish. Or suppose a king is about to go to war against another king. Will he not first sit down and consider whether he is able with 10,000 men to oppose one coming against him with 20,000? If he is not able, he will send a delegation while the other is still a long way off and will ask for terms of peace. In the same way, any of you who does not give up everything he has cannot be my disciple. So he's telling them to consider the cost of being a Christian. And I always thought that was kind of strange. It seems almost like he's trying to discourage them from following him. But I think I know why he said this now. He's trying to eliminate surprises. When I talk to a customer, they say, wow, that's a lot of money. I said, yeah, they're not cheap. I don't sugarcoat that they're expensive. And I try to eliminate surprises, and I tell them that's what I'm trying to do. I say, I'll try to eliminate surprises. So this is how much the safe is. This is what it costs if you want it delivered to your house. This is what it costs if you want it put in your basement. And if you want it drop shipped to your house, we have to find that out. We don't know. And I tell them their options on ordering all this stuff. And I try to make sure there's no surprises, no bad surprises. Because uncertainty brings fear. And by disclosing as much as I can, it helps them feel like they're making an informed decision. This is a fairly important purchase. If you're buying a safe like this, you have some things you consider very valuable. You may have something, grandpa's old pocket watch or whatever that you're worried about losing. You may have some things that are irreplaceable. And you want to make an educated decision. So anything they may be wondering about is just an undealt with fear. And that uncertainty prevents them from making the call or making a decision. Another thing is, if I tell them the good and bad, they know I'm being straight with them. They don't have to wonder if I'm just blowing smoke at them or if I'm just trying to sugarcoat everything and make it sound great, grand, and wonderful. So it makes them trust me a little easier. Another reason I'll tell them that is because if they say yes and I sugarcoated everything, they may back out later. And it's unlikely they'll be back if it happens that way. If they back out, it's unlikely they'll be back. And they'll use what I left out as an excuse. And then, like I mentioned, I sell the very best safes I've seen anywhere, and they are not cheap. And I'm upfront about this because I expect them to pay the price if they choose to buy one. Okay? I expect them to pay the price. And finally, people's perception of how valuable something is affected by the price. Often we devalue items we get a steep discount on or that we get for free. It doesn't have the same importance to us. So if it has a high price, I feel like it's important. If I have to weigh the benefits and costs of a purchase in my mind and then I choose to buy, that reinforces in my head that that was important, that this is a valuable thing. So we take this back to witnessing. Uncertainty brings fear, right? So people who are approaching church, especially if they've not been involved with a congregation before, they have a lot of fears. I think the most common one is probably, I don't think I can change, or I have too many vices, or I'm not good enough. I think that's probably the most common one. What if I can't do it? What if I can't meet the expectations? I'll feel like a failure. If I give them a better idea what to expect, it gets rid of a lot of that, or at least brings it out where we can talk about it. So if you tell someone, okay, well, if you choose to be baptized, you'll become a new creature. But it's not all at once. You're still going to have temptations. So temptations are still going to be there. You're not going to come out of the water and then all of a sudden I'm not tempted by sin anymore. So we let them know that up front, because otherwise a week after they're baptized, they're going to fall on their face and they're going to be really disappointed. Anything we can lay out there that will help them understand what to expect will be helpful. And again, if I tell them the good and the bad, they know I'm not just blowing smoke at them. They know that they can trust me, that I have their best at heart. And I don't want them to back out because of something I didn't tell them. They didn't know this was going to be part of it. When we help someone come to Christ, we want them to be able to stick with it even when it's not easy. And they need to know that they won't be alone. You know, with my safes, if there's a problem, the manufacturer absolutely stands behind that, which is one of the reasons I like the company. Well, when we have a problem, we have God behind us. We have the Holy Spirit behind working on his behalf here, and we have each other. So we have a support system. We're not just left our own devices. But we don't want to act as if every moment's going to be easy either. And we talked about how people's perception of how valuable something is affected by price. There is nothing more valuable than this. And if you tell them there's no price required for that, they probably are not going to believe you, or they're going to think it's not as valuable as you are saying it is. Christ paid the price, but we still have tasks to do with that, and we still have trials to go through. So he didn't pay all of it. He paid the part we couldn't pay. We're still responsible for the part we can pay. And then let's go to Acts 8. If you're doing this right, when you're all said and done, the person should be almost like a friend. They should trust you, and you should like them, and everybody should know that you've got each other's best interests at heart. The salesmanship has gotten a bad name from people like used car salesmen and things like that. If you ever work with a real professional salesperson, they are helping you get what you need. If they will never sell you something you don't need, and they won't try to push off a model that is more beneficial for them, but it isn't the one that would suit you best. A professional is looking out for his customer, not just himself. And that's kind of how we are. We're not doing this because we're going to get a big payday for bringing another Christian to Christ. There may be a nice benefit when we reach heaven, but that's not why we're doing it. We're doing it because we don't want to see our fellow man go down in flames. So. Acts 8, starting in verse 26. Now an angel of the Lord said to Philip, "Go south to the road, the desert road, that goes down from Jerusalem to Gaza." So he started out, and on his way he met an Ethiopian eunuch, an important official in charge of all the treasury of Candace, queen of the Ethiopians. This man had gone to Jerusalem to worship, and on his way home was sitting in his chariot reading the book of Isaiah the prophet. The Spirit told Philip, "Go to that chariot and stay near it." Then Philip ran up to the chariot and heard the man reading Isaiah the prophet. "Do you understand what you are reading?" Philip asked. "How can I," he said, "unless someone explains it to me?" So he invited Philip to come up and sit with him. The eunuch was reading this passage of Scripture. "He was led like a sheep to the slaughter, and as a lamb before the shearer is silent, so he did not open his mouth. In his humiliation he was deprived of justice. Who can speak of his descendants, for his life was taken from the earth?" The eunuch asked Philip, "Tell me, please, who is the prophet talking about, himself or someone else?" Then Philip began with that very passage of Scripture and told him the good news about Jesus. As they traveled along the road, they came to some water, and the eunuch said, "Look, here is water. Why shouldn't I be baptized?" And he gave orders to stop the chariot. Then both Philip and the eunuch went down into the water, and Philip baptized him. When they came up out of the water, the Spirit of the Lord suddenly took Philip away, and the eunuch did not see him again, but went on his way rejoicing. This is kind of unusual. It's not that often that you have someone come in and you talk to them the first time, and they're ready to go. It does happen. But it's kind of unusual. So now we've related to the person. We've asked some questions. We've listened, find out what's important to them, find out where they're at. And we've taken some time to educate them. And now it's time to kind of evaluate, okay, where are they at now? And this is I had to think about how I do this when I was writing the lesson, because it's not something I don't think of this, okay, it's time to close. I just want to see where they're at. I'm curious. So I'll ask them, "So what are you thinking?" So what are you thinking is nice and general. If you use it in the context of witnessing, the person might be thinking they're ready to be baptized. I don't want to, and if that's the case, I don't want to ask them, "So would you like to have a Bible study?" Because I would like to ask them that, but I don't want to ask that if they're ready to be baptized now. I don't want them to put it off, because I asked the wrong question. On the other hand, if they're not ready to be baptized, but they'd kind of like a study, then I don't want to scare them off by saying, "You want to be baptized?" So I say, "What are you thinking?" And that gives me a pretty good idea. It doesn't rule anything out. It doesn't apply any pressure. Just lets me know where they're at. I was thinking about how I do this, and it's also conversational. It's not like a script, but I think some things I commonly say is I'll ask them how soon you think you'll want to buy one. Just throw it out there. Where are you thinking of putting the safe in your home? I like that one because it makes them imagine the safe in their house already. But it doesn't apply any pressure. So if I were doing that with a Bible study, I'd say, "If you decide to study with us, where would you like to do it? Would you like to do it at our house, your house, or maybe a restaurant or somewhere neutral?" Because then they're imagining themselves doing the study, which puts you that much closer to getting them involved. But it was very low pressure, and whose choice was it? I always put that part in front, "If you decide," because I'm not... A lot of people will get real pushy, and they'll just assume that you've already decided, and that's... They used to teach that in sales, and it's terrible because people push back. Next thing is that high pressure does not work. It may work against you, Because if I try to push you, you'll push back. Okay? People are full of fear. If you push too hard, they're afraid that you're manipulating them. If you speak the truth, their own situation will likely create a fear in them of missing out, of losing their opportunity. So I'll give you a for instance with the safes. I'm getting ready to place an order. I'll be calling the order in the next week or two. I only do this a couple times a year, and it depends on how many orders I get. But it's a big, it's a chance to save big money on shipping. Because if somebody wants a special order of safe and it's not part of a big order, I've seen it, the lowest I've seen is about $300 to ship it, and the highest has been in the 800s. So that's a huge chunk of change. If they get in on a big order, we can get it down to $150, or if we get 10 or more, it's free. So that's kind of a big deal. But if I tell someone I'm going to order next week, I think if I just say that, then they may think, well, he's just telling me he's going to order so that he'll get me to buy. So what I say is, it's okay if you're not ready to order now. I just want to let you know it was out there in case you wanted to get on this one. We may have one in the spring. It just depends on how many orders we get. That's 100% true. I applied no pressure. But now they have a natural pressure on them because they want to save this money on shipping. And they don't know if there's going to be an order in the spring. So now they have to figure out if they're going to do it now. It's much better if they apply their own pressure. You ask questions that make them consider something and they'll apply their own pressure. You don't have to. I just think that in witnessing or in sales, that the only exception to this would be maybe a really heartfelt plea where you can tell the person cares about you. That might get through. But if I'm just trying to be pushy, I'm convinced it doesn't work. There's plenty of uncertainty regarding our lives. There's car accidents, there's sudden illnesses, etc. If they understand what's at stake, if we've done our job educating them, we don't have to apply additional pressure. They've got it. They're making their own pressure. We do have to ask them if they're ready to take the next step. I think a lot of times we make the mistake of we offer to study with someone, and then we don't ask them if they'd like to. Listen to this and see if there's a difference. We'd love to sit down and look at a few scriptures with you. Pause. And then if I say that same thing and then I follow it with, do you think you'd be interested in that? Now they have to respond. One is just a ethereal out there, someday, if you want to, we'd like to study with you. Now I say, would you be interested? Oh, he wants an answer. I have to decide now. And if they say, maybe, or yes, then when do you think? Just do once a week if you want. And then you start asking where, and before long they're imagining, hey, I'm going to do this. In their head, they're moving that way. But it's got to be their decision. One of the things that's become obvious in trying to sell these safes is I cannot make the person decide, and I don't want to. I want them to decide. And the goal for me is, and I tell them this too, I say, my goal is 5 years from now, you open your safe, you're really happy you bought what you bought. It's exactly what you needed. It isn't anything more than you needed. It isn't anything less. It's exactly what you wanted. I want you to know what to expect so that you're happy with it, what it will and won't do. And it seems silly to compare selling or buying a safe to taking advantage of Christ, because one is minuscule compared to the other. But it's the same process. They make the decision. And all we do is we sow seed, we water, and God provides the increase. But we have to listen, we have to ask questions, and we have to, as little force as it is, at some time you do have to force a decision. Would you be interested? When would you like to start? Because otherwise it's just too easy to put things off. Those are my thoughts for this morning. If you haven't taken advantage of Christ's sacrifice, would you like to? Would you be interested? We'd love to help you with that as we stand and sing.